from WABE in Atlanta. This is City Lights. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thank you for listening. This is our daily look at the arts and the impact they have on the culture of Atlanta. We have a saxophone and piano combo on today's show. Musician and composer Malek Jandali is putting together beautifully painted pianos on the streets of Atlanta for the public to play. He'll be in later this hour to talk about pianos for peace. The Art Deco Jewel on Ponce has a new owner. We'll hear from the Atlanta Film Society's Chris Escobar about taking ownership of the Plaza Theater. And first ahead, we're in for a good time with Mike Burton. From Jackson, Mississippi to stages throughout the country, Mike Burton has made his mark on jazz and pop. Usually a saxophonist, he is an accomplished instrumentalist, touring with big names and developing his own projects as well. Mike performs with the Good Times Brass Band at Venkman's this Friday, and he joins us now in studio to talk about his career in music. Mike, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Always good to have another Indiana University School of Music person on this program.
That's right.
How did your interest in jazz start?
My dad initially, playing music around the house. And then I had an uncle of mine who lived next door to me, and he had this great jazz collection, just so many albums. And I was maybe in middle school, seventh grade. I would sit at his house for hours, just sitting on the floor listening to Miles Davis and Charlie Parker, just, the good stuff. So.
And I read that your mom was a singer?
Yes, she still sings. She sings gospel with the mass choir back home in Mississippi.
So Music was something you were born into, surrounded
by. Definitely. Mom sang all the time. Dad exposed me to a lot, so it was great.
I watched an interview where you said you started gigging around the age of 16.
Yeah.
And your mom had to get you into the club where you'd perform. did she have like a little note? Mike has my permission to play when other people are drinking. How did you go from that to touring with Mary J. Blige?
Well, I guess to start with that gig, Jackson, where I'm from, it's a small town. So, my parents knew a lot of people. And I was, up and coming, and I put a little band together, and they found me a place to play. It was a little blues club called the Snooty Fox.
Oh, I love it.
I was there like every Thursday.
And of course, you never touched a beer.
Oh, never.
No. You weren't even in the midst of
that's
anything.
That's right. I didn't even see them doing it.
So you've toured and recorded with big names such as Mary J. Blige. I wonder, when you perform with the likes of people in that world, do you have to turn down your jazz sensibilities?
I wouldn't say that. I think it kind of all works together. I think it all comes from the same place, the blues. I don't. Because now I'm touring with an artist, Jill Scott, who's a big R&B artist.
And a marvelous actress.
Definitely. She's amazing. I have a solo in the show every night, and I'm definitely trying to dig and find some of my good bebop licks from Indiana, from David Baker, and just make it all work together. It's all music.
Yeah, this is true. You have also performed with several of Tyler Perry's stage productions. Tell us, Mike, it sounds from your description of the music you grew up hearing and your sensibilities further honed in Indiana. How do you imbibe the spirit of Medea when you are performing in those stage shows?
Well, I worked with Tyler Perry for 10 years, so all of his stage plays that he was doing during that time, and I mean, I guess the hardest part was just trying not to laugh the whole time, because he is a character, you know, and each show was different. I mean, it was really improv, comedy improv. Every night it was something different, especially when he was on the show. So it was just a great time.
You know? I've heard that He can be very good to work with.
Oh, yeah. He's a great guy. He's a great guy. And like I said, I worked with him for years, a long time. And I actually just played for his – he had a rap party for one of his television shows, played for that. So I saw him just recently. Yeah, so he's a great guy.
This is a good thing.
Yeah.
If you are just joining us, I'm speaking with musician Mike Burton. He and the Good Times Brass Band perform at Veekman's this Friday. We'll be back after a short break on WABE Atlanta.
Support for WABE comes from Nissan of Noonan. Nissan of Noonan, a fresh approach to the car buying experience. Their number is 844-FRESH-15, online at nissanofnoonan.com. And from the 31st Annual Marietta Art in the Park Festival, including work from more than 175 artists. No tickets needed for this family-friendly way to spend Labor Day weekend. artparkmarietta.com.
This is City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Lois Reitzes, here with you, and Mike Burton. He and the Good Times Brass Band perform at Veekman's this Friday. Mike, you have performed in several television house bands. Mm-hmm. How do those experiences differ from performing with a band on tour?
Well, I guess a lot of it is you have to stay alert, because a lot of things are off the cuff. They're just, you know, as far as bumpers and that nature, like when you're going out to commercial, you have to kind of stay with it, because it's happening so fast. And we wear our inner ear monitors, so our director is talking to us, telling us what to play and what to do. So a lot of it is just, you know, being quick on your feet. As opposed to a tour, you have, you know, a month of rehearsal and a lot of time to kind of prepare for certain things. Television is quick.
Yeah, I know all about that production stuff. And in the commercial world, it's even more restrictive in terms of when you have to hit those posts.
Exactly.
How do the performing experiences in terms of those TV performances, though? I'm curious about how you interact with the host and the band leader. I mean, knowing that you are hearing in your headphones, okay, we've only got 20 seconds for this, we have to hit a commercial in 30 seconds. Yeah. How does that enable you to interact with what is happening in the moment on stage?
I guess at this point now, it's just repetition. So it's like from doing it for so long, you know, I kind of know how to do it now. But at first, it's nerve wracking. You know, like my first experience, I can remember being there with a friend of mine, Melvin Jones, plays trumpet with me, and we were doing the Monique Show on BET, and it was both of our first time doing something of that nature. So and we played together for years, but it was a whole different thing. So just trying to get our nerves together, trying to be alert and watch the director and watch the host and everything. It's so much going on.
Yeah, because as a musician in your upbringing, certainly your focus was entirely on your music as you were performing it.
Exactly.
We have some of your music. Tell us where we should begin with Messing It Up.
Yeah, let's start there.
All right.
We'll be right back.
we're listening to Messing It Up, although nothing sounds messed up about that. Music Mike Burton wrote, the saxophonist, is here with us in studio. That sounds like a classic. I mean, you really pay tribute to a classic jazz sound. I hear Dave Baker in there.
Oh, well, thank you. And I also, go-go music is the groove in there. You know, so my wife is from Washington, D.C., and go-go is a, you know, is very popular in that area. And so just going there, you know, and hanging with her family and going to different shows and seeing the go-go bands, I had to bring that back to
Does she wear white
Atlanta.
Go-go boots?
Well, see, it's a different thing. I guess the term go-go kind of comes from, like, you know, like DJs, when they came in, I guess, in a disco era, they would keep the music going and going and going. So live bands were kind of on the decline. So a guy named Chuck Brown back in D.C. back in the late 70s, early 80s, he started this go-go sound, meaning basically just the music keeps going.
Yeah, and so, you could tell my era because I was thinking, you know, about when I was 12 and 13 and had my go-go boots.
The go-go boots, oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool, too. I got to tell it. go buy some go-go boots next time, you know.
What has been one of your favorite performing experiences?
Wow. Well, I guess this last year I went to Japan for the first time with Jill Scott. We played Tokyo, we played Yokohama. So to go there, I guess, you know, for me, I love traveling and I love, you know, new experiences and just seeing the world for myself and not what's fed to me in, you know, on the news or whatever. You know, I just love to see it for myself and make my own decisions about people and cultures and everything. So it's just a very eye-opening experience. And Japan was beautiful. The people were so nice.
They're real music lovers. The spectrum.
Yeah, all music. I mean, it was just beautiful. I can't wait to go back. So that's definitely probably one of my favorite.
I hope Jill Scott is as wonderful as she appears.
Oh, she's beautiful. She's great. I mean, I've worked with a lot of artists. She's the most down-to-earth, most accessible, just a great spirit, you know, all the way around.
I loved her acting in the HBO series, the Ladies' Number One Detective Agency.
Yes, yes.
And her ear for dialect.
Yeah, she sounds like she's from there, right?
I was sure she was from Botswana. Right. Not that I know that much about Botswana, but right. I thought, this does not sound like someone who speaks American English.
Right, exactly. Yeah, she's amazing.
It was fantastic. Well, at Venkman's this Friday, you'll be performing with the Good Times Brass Band.
Yes.
How did you get involved with those musicians?
Well, several friends of mine, we all tour and play with various artists, so we just wanted to have something of our own, you know, when we aren't on the road. So this kind of bring us all together to do something fun. It's just a fun, good time. That's why it's Good Times Brass Band, because we just have a good time on stage, and we take some of the D.C. go-go grooves I was talking about. We take some New Orleans second line type music, and it's a party. So, you know, the first half of the show is going to be Good Times Brass Band stuff, and the second half I'm going to debut some of the songs from my project.
I want to hear another one of those. We have about 3.5 minutes left. Pray, Thank You, or Come Back.
Let's do Pray.
Everybody just pray. I pray for you. You pray for me. I pray for Jackson, Mississippi.
Pray.
You were multitasking in that number, weren't you?
Yeah, trying to sing a little bit.
Sing.
Play. Saxophone. Yeah, play the saxophone, yeah.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
There is something just unmatchable about playing with friends, don't you think?
Definitely. It makes it all better. It makes it easier, you know.
Because you kind of, you know, you finish each other's
exactly.
musical sentences.
Exactly. It's like having a conversation. I say it all the time. I think the best bands are those that have some kind of camaraderie. I know even being on tour with guys, I mean, we're all friends. Being in Jill Scott's band, we all hang out together, you know.
Mm-hmm. Will you bring her here if she comes to Atlanta?
I would definitely try to see if I could do that.
Mike, this is an album release that you have coming up. We've been listening to a couple selections from it. Are all of the songs on your new album originals?
Yes, I wrote all of them, yeah.
You've been busy.
Yeah, well, it's taken me some time. I mean, it's coming out now, but I've been probably writing these songs since 2014, 15. And you know, a lot of it is just kind of reflective of what's going on in the country now, you know.
Yeah.
You know, from police brutality to dealing with things in politics. And, you know, so just a lot of my thoughts about what's going on. And it's a very, very personal project for
yes.
me. You know?
In those lyrics, I heard praying for Jackson.
Yeah, and if you heard, even before that, I talk about America and Syria, North Korea, just a lot. I name a lot of places. And just, you know, I think a lot of times in America, we have so much division, you know, about this country or this person, this color, this whatever. But I think God just wants the best for all of us. So that's kind of what this project is talking about on so many songs, you know.
It's a beautiful outlook.
Thank you.
And beautiful music. Mike Burton, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This has been amazing.
Mike Burton and the Good Times Brass Band perform at Venkman's in the Old Fourth Ward. Yep. This Friday at 9:30 p.m.
Support for WABE comes from Reliable Heating and Air, a Trane dealer, a family company since 1978, offering heating and air, plumbing, electrical, and duct cleaning 24 hours a day. Learn more at ReliableAir.com. And from Innovation Arts and Entertainment, an evening with David Sedaris at the Fox Theater, author, humorist, and contributor to This American Life, an evening of readings, book signing, and Q&A, Sunday, October 22nd, tickets at foxtheater.org.
The historic Plaza Theater is Atlanta's only independent movie theater. And every year, it's the site of films, festivals, special events, and of course, screenings of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. The theater just announced a new owner, Chris Escobar. He's the director of the Atlanta Film Society, which runs the Atlanta Film Festival. We have Chris here to tell us about what this purchase means. Chris, welcome back to City Lights.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
The Plaza Theater was founded in 1939. Would you tell us a bit more of its history?
Yeah. Founded, you know, and I always try and think of the picture of, you know, this is on the brink of World War II, you know, and just kind of what's happening globally. But it was an art deco theater started that was a combination of cinema with the occasional live theater. So it actually has a full fly space behind the screen and backstage. And this is about 10 years after the Majestic had been built. So the whole property had kind of been done in phases. And there's really actually, for me personally, I've been over time building kind of the history. There's really not nearly that much available in what kind of programming the Plaza played and audiences or even photographs in the sort of the 50s, 60s, early 70s era. The irony is what you really start to see more history on is when, for a brief time, the Plaza was an adult theater in the 70s as that kind of decline of that area started. And then where you start to be able to kind of really fill out more of the picture is when George LaFont bought the theater in the early 80s and converted the upstairs balcony into a second auditorium and then really started bringing kind of the LaFont signature programming in terms of independent films and foreign films and really kind of put the Plaza on the map for kind of greater Atlanta through programming and as a part of the picture of his larger theater chain.
Why is the Plaza Atlanta's only independent theater?
Well, a lot of, you know, we have a number of great facilities in cinema, but they're all owned by major national corporations. They're either owned by Regal Cinemas, which is like Atlantic Station, Hollywood 85. They're owned by AMC, which owns a theater at Phipps and Cumberland, and even the Terra Theater is owned by Regal, or Landmark Theaters, which is another major chain that bought the Midtown Cinema. And that's actually part of why LaFont had to sell the theater in the early 2000s, is because it shut the Plaza out of being able to access a lot of the kind of programming that he had built the reputation on. And so the theater was not performing as well, and then he sold it to the previous owners, Johnny and Gail Ray, who were a lovely couple that had no dreams of owning a theater or a theater empire. They just couldn't stand to not do anything, and so they had actually taken a mortgage out on their house to be able to buy the theater and keep the doors open. And what they brought to the table was really they didn't have the capital to do any major upgrades or anything like that, but they were able to bring a lot of the community programming in, and they held it for a number of years and even formed a nonprofit, the Plaza Theater Foundation, to keep the doors open. But they were struggling, and more so that struggle was exacerbated by technology upgrades from the industry, where it was pushing out the availability of 35 millimeter film offerings, and so they had less and less to be able to offer and didn't even have the capacity to show something on Blu-ray or digital computer. And so in 2012, the Film Society got involved and helped them with that theater. We brought in our HD projectors. We helped them manage the theater, help move tickets. But our capacity of bringing change was even still limited. And so the Plaza was lucky enough that Michael Ferlinger and his partner John came along, and he was one of the first people to came along that had both the interest of making it the Plaza, but kind of taking that to the next level and possessed the experience and the capital to do what was necessary. And so the Plaza, and really by an extent Atlanta, has been very lucky that there have been these key people in the Plaza's history that have kind of wanted what was best for the theater and saw the potential in the theater and brought these components. And that's kind of one of the things in the future that I hope to sort of build on, the integrity of the programming choices that LaFont made, the kind of openness to the community that the Rays made, and then the business practices and the commitment to making the necessary reinvestments in the theater that Michael made.
What are some of the challenges for the upkeep of an old theater?
Yeah, I mean, there are several. For one, I mean, aside from the challenges that any independently, locally owned business that doesn't have the means of a major corporation, I mean, running a business that's, going on 80 years old, when you want to keep the integrity and what's special of that, to upkeep an 80-year-old marquee, and there's not a lot of fixtures left that are actually original in the interior, but upkeeping those and not making the choices that are just simpler and cheaper, but ones that kind of maintain that integrity, sometimes that's a challenge. And that's part of where the sort of third leg of what's been an important partnership of the three, over the last few years comes in, which is that foundation, that Plaza Theater Foundation that Johnny and Gail founded. And so the primary thing that the foundation does is improvement projects, and then helping underwrite the cost of community groups to be able to use the Plaza Theater without impacting the viability of the theater itself. And it does that mostly through holding the first ever liquor, beer, and wine license that the Plaza has in over 75 years.
Well, to your point about community, like so much around Atlanta, the area surrounding the Plaza Theater on Ponce has seen a lot of development. Mm-hmm. A few months ago, some of the buildings nearby were bought.
Yeah.
So the public was scared that perhaps the Plaza would be torn down. Is that an ongoing fear for the theater?
It has been, and I'm glad the community has shared my sentiments, although I've been pretty kind of close to it enough to know where there is and where there should be and shouldn't be a concern. The Plaza has seen lots of change. Like I said, it went from an adult theater because of the decline of that area to all sorts of things over the years. What has recently happened, and to kind of sort it all out, is the Griffith family and business on behalf of the Griffith family has owned that property for the last 85 years. That's what was bought earlier this year by a company called Asana Partners. Now, they just own the property and the buildings, but all the businesses are individually owned. And so what I'm buying is the business of the Plaza Theater and the equipment and everything inside of it. And so the reason why there shouldn't be a concern is two things. One, that property is about to get a landmark designation. It's gone through most of that process. It was started earlier this year. We're expecting it to be on Mayor Reed's desk in October, and that he'll sign that. And so regardless of who owns or operates or whatever, that property as a whole, which includes from San Francisco to Majestic, all of that whole sector is going to be protected under a landmark designation. Two, the company that bought it, Asana Partners, they are completely supportive of that effort. In fact, they really only invest in historically relevant retail property in walkable areas, and they look at places that kind of need a little bit more TLC and investment, and not just from a physical side, but thinking about creating a full experience on the whole property. And what they've shared publicly, you know, really speaks to that. What their other properties are throughout the country, mostly in the South, really speaks to that. And then lastly, I have the advantage of age. And so I have the intention of owning and running that theater for the next 40 years and passing it on to my kids.
We live in an age when people get their entertainment, their news, almost everything they want on demand during a time when streaming is so readily available and there's wonderful HD quality people can view on their televisions at home. Why buy a theater?
That's a great question. You know, if I would not get into the theater business if we were talking about a regular traditional kind of multiplex. Overall, the trend for regular ticket sales is going down 12% just year over year. Where the exception is in the experience and in what an independent and locally owned business has the flexibility and the connection to the community to offer. And so that's different in art houses. So the Plaza is an art house. It's different with historic venues, of which it's a historic venue, and it's different with independently owned theaters. So it's all three of those. And then now it's going from having the distinction as being the only LGBT-owned cinema in the city to now the only minority-owned cinema in the city. So it has a number of distinctions, and it's sort of simultaneously what creates challenges for it, also give it the flexibility and the nimbleness to kind of really serve the audience. And as we get more and more in our living rooms and on our phones, and there's been all kinds of talk about how we feel more and more disconnected, the experience of a community event, of a shared event, and of something that is not downloadable and something that is rare and is timely becomes more and more treasured. And so that's where the opportunity is for art houses, for historic theaters, for independently owned theaters. That's why I see the positive vision and the team that I'm putting together to own and run the Plaza Theater is in not just having some great first run films. So you better believe we're going to be, you know, trying as hard as we can to get some of the really good cinema that comes out. Not necessarily everything that's in theaters that's more strictly entertainment, but everything that's really thought-provoking films that are really exciting and that are really worth seeing on the big screen. But then we're going to also continue to have some of the cult favorites, like, of course, the Rocky Horror and The Room. But then, you know, what's really important is having those special community events where there's a live factor. You know, Rocky has always had that. You know, Cineprov and some of these other things that happen where it's not just about what's on screen, but about what's in the room. And then when you add to that who's in the room, and there's both friends and soon-to-be friends in the room, and you have this shared communal experience. And then you add to that, of course, you know, classics and repertory films, and you add the possibility of seeing that on a variety of formats. And so the Plaza has, in my opinion, a responsibility to also have a place of those classic formats as well, and do it in a way where you can show rare film prints. And that is, for me, a top priority, and I'm hopeful to be able to announce some exciting things in that regard. But the idea is have something for everyone on the classics, on the currents, on the rare finds, all of that. You know, so there's a lot that can be done physically. There's a lot that can be done programmatically. There's a lot that can be done, again, to both protect what we all love about the Plaza, enhance that, and then make that more of a consistent experience, but then also make sure that there's something there for everyone.
Obviously, making movies and watching movies are different, but do you think Atlanta theaters could be rejuvenated with the increasing presence of film industry here? Could the film industry help a place like the Plaza?
Absolutely, and you're tempting me to speak to some things that are still in the works that I hope to announce down the road, but particularly for films that are shot in Georgia, I think there's a place for them to be at the Plaza, most especially. You know, the Plaza has also respectfully and secretly been host to a number of folks who are filming. You know, we've had Clint Eastwood and Tom Hanks in there a few times. Sometimes we know about it, sometimes we don't know when, you know, for instance, for the Game of Thrones fans, I was in there one time and And Aiden, I'm forgetting his last name, who plays Littlefinger on Game of Thrones, just popped in to watch a movie, and I was like, holy cow. So and you can usually control my fanboy factor, but when you're a huge fan of something like that, it's hard to. But yeah, from an attendance standpoint, I think there's a real opportunity, just going, right? Even if that's a total surprise. But there's a lot that the industry can do to support the Plaza and to make sure that our homegrown film, and that really is being the only independent cinema and the only locally owned cinema, it is the only, in the city of Atlanta, obviously. And so there's a real both opportunity and in my mind, an obligation and responsibility to support that and to support the place where there are one of the few places that independent filmmakers can have their work shown. They're not going to be doing that typically at a Regal or an AMC. And one of the places where the next generation of filmmakers can go to be inspired and to really have access to great programming and an ability to show it.
Chris Escobar is the director of the Atlanta Film Society and the soon-to-be owner of the Plaza Theater. Congratulations, Chris. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Sitting in the darkness.
You are listening to City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. Garrison Keillor, Prairie Home Love and Comedy, will be featured at the Atlanta Botanical Garden on September 8th at 8 p.m. And WABE is giving away a pair of tickets, which you may win by calling 678-686-0367. That's 678-686-0367. Good luck.
Support for WABE comes from DK Gallery, the contemporary fine art gallery on the Marietta Square, presenting 1,000 words at First Friday Art Walk and Art Talk plus poetry readings this Saturday, 2 to 4. DKGallery.us. And from Healthcare Georgia Foundation, advancing health and expanding access to affordable, quality health care for all Georgians. For more information, you can visit healthcaregeorgia.org.
You're listening to City Lights on WABE, where ATL meets NPR. Malek Jandali is a multifaceted talent. The German-born Syrian-American pianist is best known as a concert pianist and composer. The Arab Spring in 2012 and the ongoing Syrian civil war have more recently focused his musical gifts on activism and humanitarian work. Malek started Pianos for Peace in 2015. And the public art project that puts pianos around the metro Atlanta area for anyone to play has grown. Malek Jandali joins me now to talk about this year's festival alongside Emmett Stevenson, Deputy Director of Fulton County Arts and Culture. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Malek, previously on our show, you said that people can change the world. What part does music and art have in that process?
I believe art unites people. And with all humbleness, if it doesn't impact every segment of the people, I believe art is nothing. So the Pianos for Peace project is about the people. Is about the community. We are making the arts accessible to everyone, and we are building peace through music and education. We're going to have this festival starting tomorrow with 50 pianos painted by amazing local artists throughout the art centers of the Fulton County. And after the 2 weeks, where the whole public will enjoy, last year we had 1 million-plus people served and impacted somehow through this festival. After the 2 weeks, we donate all these pianos to permanent homes in underserved communities, such as nursing homes, Title I schools, hospitals, autistic centers. where we can have the real impact for the long-term community programs. We have a couple of schools who restarted their music program from Pianos for Peace last year. We had a strategic relationship with the Fulton County Arts and Culture, and headed by Lionel Thomas, and where they stored all these pianos and engaged all the artists in their respective communities. So in short, I believe music unites people. It is my duty as an American artist to give back to my community. You know, during my world tour in Australia, the Sydney Opera House with my trio, and off the air, I talked about my commission with the Baltimore Symphony
yes.
Orchestra and Maestra Maren Alsop.
She's extraordinary.
Hi, Maestra.
She's been on our show.
Yes. You know, we had that amazing world premiere in Baltimore. On this City Lights and in my own community, I urge the business community, the Chamber of Commerce, the Atlanta Symphony, all of us to join together in these challenging times and unite in our Symphony for Peace so we can have a better future and make the arts accessible to everyone.
It is noble. This is the third year of Pianos for Peace. You started with 29, now you have 50. You mentioned some of the schools where music programs resumed. Have you noticed any other tangible changes around Atlanta since your pianos were placed?
You know, the soft power of music is amazing, you know, and especially with music, you can't see music. However, it touches so many people's hearts, and it engages the community. The impact that it has is unprecedented, other than, you know, like an exhibition. You know, you always have an exhibition or a museum. It's a closed environment. Our initiative is open, is in the streets. We're changing the narrative, and we are impacting everyone in the community. So we invite everyone. For example, the Drew Academy, you know, when the kids received their pianos, I mean, their eyes, their smiles, their we even invited the Major Johnson, you know, from the police department to join us. So we're changing the narrative. We're calling him a peace officer rather than a police officer. And the kids already, you know, see a police officer playing the piano in their school. And, you know, that's a special thanks to our Ambassador for Peace, Marjorie Clay, who actually enabled us to honor Chief Turner last year, the Atlanta Police Chief. And this year, at the closing ceremony in the airport, which is the busiest airport in the world, we're going to have the closing ceremony on September the 28th at the Atrium. And we are working on honoring Chief Erica Shields, the new chief of the Atlanta Police, during that ceremony in an effort to bring the community, the law enforcement, everybody in the city of Atlanta, the Fulton County, the Piedmont Park. We have five campuses, Emory University, Spelman, Georgia State, Georgia Tech, Agnes. I mean, we're bringing the students, the faculty, the staff, the community together, and bringing unity back to our community.
Emmett, this seems just like the sort of thing Fulton County Arts and Culture would participate in. What support have you added to Pianos for Peace?
Well, Lois, let me say, first of all, it's amazing to be in your presence. I know your voice, and it's
Thank
great
you.
To put a face with a voice.
You're very kind.
So just our part with Pianos for Peace, under the incredible leadership of Lionel Thomas, who is our new director, and he's been there for a year now, so I guess I should stop calling him new, but we have an opportunity with this partnership to reach the community and make arts accessible through the medium or the discipline of music. So we bring our communities together, and we've done that through our art centers. We have five art centers throughout Fulton County, and we've used this project to engage our community of families together to paint the pianos. We've engaged professional artists to paint the pianos, and we are looking to place pianos throughout Fulton County so that everybody can use them as a mechanism for building community.
Who donates the pianos?
Pianos for Peace, you know, basically we donate all the pianos So the pianos don't disappear.
I meant how do you acquire them?
Oh, the public.
Yes.
The public, the generosity of the amazing Atlanta community. They donate the pianos, and now we have an amazing partnership with Sarah Womack. She is with the Atlanta Public Schools. She heads the arts and music programs, and she's identifying Title I schools and schools in need, especially in underserved communities, where we are going to donate the piano and recreate their music programs in these communities.
Emmett, what do you think makes a successful public art project?
I think the broadness of the project, and Pianos for Peace is one of a kind in terms of getting pianos out across this area geographically. So just the broad appeal of the program, being able to engage people directly with the art project is definitely impactful, and that's what we look for. And that's why we are here.
Yeah, this is a very different sort of adventure. I mean, in terms of public art, one thinks of sculpture, of murals and monuments. Here we have something interactive.
Exactly.
Absolutely. You know, it's not just a public arts festival. We go throughout the year. I mean, that's the 2-week festival. But, you know, the real impact goes into the long-term community programs through the schools, through the arts centers, and through the Atlanta public schools and the nursing homes. I remember when we had the elderly in one of the nursing homes on their wheelchairs, and that colorful piano came to their living room. They were in tears. They said, we have nothing to do all day long, and here we are. Mm-hmm. And I heard beautiful music being played on a, you know, it was an amazing artist who was on his wheelchair. Another story, you know, in the MARTA public transit system, you know, which was a historical partnership with MARTA. MARTA allowed us to have 7 or 8 stations to have pianos there. And I remember this homeless guy who came. He was hesitant to touch the piano. He wasn't sure if he was allowed to touch the piano. He was looking around, and then finally he decided to sit. And Louis, I heard the most beautiful Chopin Polonaise performed by this Atlanta artist. I still have goosebumps when I see that story. And when he finished, he wasn't a homeless guy anymore. Everybody cherished him. They were applauding him. He became an artist for those few moments when he was playing Chopin. I rushed to him. I said, where did you learn Chopin? He said, my mother used to take me to piano lessons when I was a kid. And I have been homeless for many years. I don't know if I'm impacting him or he's impacting me. I think he impacted me more than the whole festival.
It's a collaboration.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. If you are just joining us, I'm speaking with pianist Malek Jandali, the founder of Pianos for Peace, alongside Emmett Stevenson, the deputy director of Fulton County Arts and Culture. We'll be back after a short break.
On the next Closer Look, the area just keeps growing in population. The Atlanta region is now home to nearly 4.5 million people. Where is the area experiencing the greatest growth, and what does it all mean? A new population report from the Atlanta Regional Commission. I'm Rose Scott. Closer Look today at 1 on 90.1 WABE.
From AtlantaPlanet.org, here's a look at some upcoming events. There are a few more chances to see My Fair Lady at Atlanta Lyric Theater. Sunday is the last performance. And it's Atlanta Black Pride Weekend. The main festival is Sunday afternoon at Piedmont Park. If you're looking for something to do in Atlanta, visit us at atlantaplanit.org or download the app on iTunes.
This is City Lights. I'm Lois Reitzes. We're talking about this year's Pianos for Peace with its founder, Malek Jandali, and Deputy Director of Fulton County Arts and Culture, Emmett Stevenson. So, Emmett, public pianos like this are found throughout the world. Do you think Pianos for Peace has put Atlanta's public arts projects on the map?
Definitely. This is a new approach to public art, and we're all about innovation at the Arts and Culture Department of Arts and Culture at Fulton County. Again, I talked about the broad reach of this project and being able to touch people directly, impact people directly. I think that's what sets Pianos for Peace apart, and that's why we're in this partnership.
Indeed, particularly since it has this humanitarian mission. How do you decide which facilities? I understand in terms of schools, but you mentioned some nursing homes. Do these organizations approach you, or are there county organizations that you think, oh, this would be the ideal endeavor?
It's a collaboration. You know, this is a social community project. It is not my project. It's not the Image project or the Fulton County. This is the community, the Atlanta Community Project. We invite everyone, any organization in need that needs a piano, that needs our help, we are ready. Basically, we ask our ambassadors for peace, our partners, the Fulton County Arts and Culture, the airport. The airport identified two schools that need pianos. You know, that's the busiest airport in the world. And we are inviting the kids on the closing ceremony. The Piedmont Park. And the same thing with the Atlanta Beltline. The city of Atlanta. They were supportive with the permit. They granted us a generous grant for this year's operation. And we thank the mayor and the city of Atlanta for joining us. So we partner with the Atlanta public school system, with the Fulton County. And I think Emmett has a special invitation for the community on September the 21st.
Right. We are partnering, we're using this partnership to celebrate International Peace Day on September 21st at the Fulton County Government Center. That's at 141 Pryor Street in downtown. And the program will begin at noon, so we invite everybody out. We will feature world-class pianist Malek Jandali.
And Justin.
And Justin Clay, who has worked with us at our art centers teaching piano. So,
Malek, this project was in part inspired by the devastating situation in Syria. And now in the United States, we're seeing more bans on immigration into this country. Has the mission or the tone of Pianos for Peace changed during this past year?
Our mission and vision is very clear, is building peace through music and education and making the arts accessible to all. I will leave it up to the audience and to the community and to the decision and the politicians to decide.
Okay, this isn't about politics. This is about humanity.
Humanity, arts, and peace and education. And I would like to thank every ambassador for peace, every volunteer that, you know, that are helping us with moving the pianos, tuning the pianos, painting the pianos, the city. We should be united together in peace in our Symphony for Peace. I believe this is the largest Symphony for Peace in the streets and parks of Atlanta. Can you imagine? Millions of people impacted by these beautiful instruments. How wonderful is that? And the community is so caring. When we had the pianos in Eastlake or Underground or College Park or H.E. Holmes, Martha Station, people last year told me, oh, you're going to lose the piano. The people are going to vandalize. Guess what? Atlantans were so kind, so caring. The piano at Underground was pristine, and we donated it to the public schools. So my experience has been wonderful. I want to have I want to see more unity in our community. And from your program, I want to invite the business community. We need a storage facility. You know, we have so many pianos that we turn away because our facility, you know, we were only able to increase our numbers to 50 because of this amazing partnership with the Fulton County Arts Council. But we need a storage facility that can be an in-kind donation to our initiative. And the Chamber of Commerce, the Atlanta Symphony, I want everybody to join us in our Symphony for Peace.
Malik Jandali is a musician, a concert pianist, and founder of Pianos for Peace. Emmett Stevenson is Deputy Director of Fulton County Arts and Culture. Pianos for Peace kicks off this Friday and will be available to the public through September 18th. The closing ceremony will be held on September 28th at Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. Gentlemen, thank you very much and congratulations on this beautiful endeavor.
Thank you so much.
Peace.
Lois, thanks for having us.
Peace, salam, and shalom.
Support for WABE comes from Persian Rug Market, direct importers of hand-knotted Persian and Oriental rugs for over 40 years. Persian Rug Market is hosting a summer event in Midtown Atlanta on Old Chattahoochee Avenue. Learn more at PersianRugMarket.com. And from Wellstar Kennestone Hospital, which received Gold Seal distinction for heart valve, coronary artery bypass surgery, and congestive heart failure. Kennestone is one of only two programs in the country to receive this distinction. Wellstar.org.
You've been listening to City Lights, a celebration of the arts and the ways in which we express ourselves creatively. You can catch an encore broadcast this evening at 8 and tomorrow morning at 11. Children's author Judy Schachner will talk about her new book and stars of the upcoming film Crown Heights will tell us about the true story of Colin Warner, who was wrongfully imprisoned for 21 years. Our producers are Aaron Wright, Mike Johns, and Gabby Watts. Our engineer is Kevin Rinker. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thanks for joining us for City Lights and for listening to 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR.